There are passages where the Buddha teaches the relinquishing of all views. There are passages where he advocates right view. There are passages where he argues with people about right and wrong view. And a couple where he actually seeks people out to question them about their wrong views. So what's going on? I think a lot of it has to do with how we hold the view and what the view is designed to do. There are some views that are designed simply for the sake of argumentation. You take the position that the world is eternal. What are you going to do with that? You get into arguments with people who say that it's not, that it was created by a creator God or whatever. And that's the kind of view that issues only in arguments. There are other views, though, that can be used to put it into suffering. Those are the ones the Buddha recommends as right view. Even there, it's possible to use them to get into arguments. Think of the image of the snake. If you grasp the snake wrongly, grasp it by the tail, it's going to bite you. But the Buddha doesn't say, don't grasp the snake at all. After all, the snake may have some venom that can be used for making an anti-venom. So you learn how to grasp it rightly. You take a forked stick, pin it down right behind the head, and then no matter how much the snake may writhe around your arm, you can hold it safely. You get the use out of it that you want. So it's not that we don't hold to views at all. After all, how could you function? Why would you talk? If there was no right and no wrong, what would be the purpose of talking? But you have to ask yourself, right for what purpose? Wrong for what purpose? And then you can get somewhere with your views. Now, the Buddha's views are not designed for argumentation. They actually focus to a great extent on qualities in the mind, just looking at what your mind is doing right here, right now. Think of the wings to awakening, 7 lists of dhammas that are useful for the practice, different ways of looking at the practice. You've got the 4 establishings of mindfulness, the 4 right exertions, the 4 bases for success, the 5 strengths, the 5 faculties, the 7 factors for awakening, the Eightfold Noble Path. They're almost all exclusively issues of mental qualities. Now that kind of view you can put to use. And you can look at the lists and you can learn some important things. One is that the 4 main factors of the path are effort, mindfulness, concentration, discernment. These are the things that we have to develop within ourselves. And the different lists will differ in the order with which they place those things. In other words, sometimes you start with discernment and you use that to develop concentration. Sometimes you have the concentration first and then the discernment comes later. Same with mindfulness. Sometimes mindfulness comes after discernment, sometimes it comes before. Which means in the practice that it can happen either way. And the 2 qualities, mindfulness and discernment, or concentration and discernment, those 2 pairs, each side of the pair helps the other side along. As your mindfulness gets better, your discernment gets more expansive, because you can remember more things from what you've learned in the past. And as your discernment gets better, well, that's more for mindfulness to keep in mind. Same with concentration. The more you get the mind firmly established, the more you're going to see. But to get it established requires that you understand the mind, at least to some extent. However, it is interesting to notice that in all the various ways that the Buddha lists these faculties, effort and mindfulness all come before concentration, always. So as we're trying to get the mind to settle down, remember, it's not going to just happen on its own. Now, there will be times when it just seems to settle down naturally. But that's because the conditions are right. And you can just plunk right down. But if you're going to wait for the conditions to be right, it's like waiting for the weather to be right. It's totally beyond your control. You're trying to develop a skill here. Which means that you look at the qualities coming up in the mind. Not only while you're sitting here with your eyes closed, but as you go through the day. To what extent do you allow anger to come in and take charge? To what extent do you allow greed to come in? Feelings of being slighted, feelings of not being respected. Those feelings, the Buddha said, come under restlessness and anxiety. Those two are hindrances. So as you go through the day, watch out for those feelings. If they're allowed to take root in the course of the day, then they're going to be here rooted in the mind when you sit down to meditate. So you've got to be very careful. Meditation is an all-day process. The effort goes in all the time. Now, effort doesn't mean that you have to walk long hours of walking meditation or sit long hours of sitting meditation. It means, though, that you have to keep watch over your mind all the time. Because the person meditating and the person working in the kitchen, the person meditating and the person working in the orchard, they're all the same person. And qualities that allow to establish themselves in the mind don't automatically go away when you sit down to meditate. They're right there. They're going to get in the way. So remember, there's an effort that has to be carried out all the way through the day. There's the effort to prevent unskillful qualities from arising. In other words, if you know that you have certain bad habits, you make a point that you're going to be especially on the lookout for them and do what you can. Think in new ways. If you have a problem with anger, think in ways that will undercut the anger. Actively develop thought patterns in the mind so that when an angry thought comes up and you know the kind of conversation the mind has with itself when it's angry, well, have some antidote for it. Have it ready. If it does come into the mind, okay, then you use the antidote and get rid of it. Otherwise, think in the terms that would undercut the anger before it can come. The same with skillful qualities. What can you do to be more mindful? What can you do to be more compassionate, have more goodwill? Actively think these thoughts. All too often we think of meditation as not thinking. It may feel artificial to go around thinking thoughts of goodwill all the time, but it's a useful exercise. An artificial and natural are adjectives that you can just put out of your mind for the time being. Training the mind is artificial. Every effort is artificial. They're the product of artifice. Now some efforts come more easily than others, but that's because they're more habitual, that's all. And you're trying to make right effort habitual. The same with right mindfulness. try to go through the day rooted in the body, rooted in the breath. And the lessons you'll learn as you try to keep the mind under control, as you're rooted in the breath, will be there in the breath. They'll be there right available. So that when you sit down to meditate and you get focused on the breath, a lot of good associations will come along with the breath. And be ready to practice, ready to get the mind to settle down. So right effort, mindfulness, these are the things we need to develop in order to get the mind into concentration. Now we use discernment in order to foster them. We have to have right view about right effort, and we have to have right view about right mindfulness. Keep reminding ourselves that this is a really worthy activity we're engaged in. And as we engage in these activities, our right views become more precise. The Buddha talks about three kinds of discernment. There's the discernment that comes from listening, and the discernment that comes from thinking things through. But then there's the discernment that comes from practicing. So you can listen to the Dharma, you get right view on the level of listening that points you to the practice. You think things through. That you come up with difficulties in the practice. But it's the developing that really gets the discernment going, makes it yours. Otherwise, you're just borrowing other people's discernment. And as long as you're in a position where you have to borrow somebody's discernment, at least borrow the Buddha's. But you want to get ultimately to the position where you have your own. You can depend on it. It really has been tested, been fine-honed by your practice. That's when it's really yours. And paradoxically, once it's really yours, that's when you begin to let go. But you still use it. After all, after the Buddha's awakening, even though he said there was nothing in him that was fastened to any views, he still taught right view. And he still went out and argued with people who taught wrong view, especially the wrong view concerning action. So it's a question of learning how to hold to the views. If you learn how to hold skillfully, then you can get a lot of use out of them. If you hold them wrongly, then they bite. So find that forked stick, the attitude that you're going to use the views for the right purpose. And that'll keep you safe.